The last couple of weeks, we've been discussing forgery. In particular, we had discussed forgeries generally, and then a couple examples of that. And now we're actually going to move on to the second half of this lecture series, and that is censorship. And tonight, what I hope to discuss is censorship and its lasting effects, specifically in the case of the Gemara or the Talmud. And what I hope to demonstrate tonight is, although one may assume today that all issues regarding external censorship, that is, censorship done by non-Jews are in order to conform with the particular worldview or religious views of non-Jews, has today, you know, those really aren't issues for most people. Wherever you are, we generally don't live under a regime of censorship, and we're able to print more or less whatever we want. When it comes to the Talmud, there are actually instances that there remains a problem. That is, that the current editions of the Talmud don't necessarily correct various changes that are, as we'll hopefully see tonight, that are in some cases very important, and they're left, and we're left with a censored edition. Now, with all that said, it's possible to ascertain what the correct text is, but at the same time, a lot of people aren't aware that this remains an issue, and it's important to know that, in fact, it is, and perhaps the tools that one can fix this with. And what, as I mentioned, what we're going to do is we're going to talk mainly about the Talmud, and for those interested in learning more about specifically the history of the printing of the Talmud, there are actually two books that are in English, and there's others in Hebrew, that one of which we're going to talk about in a moment. But if one's interested in, you know, just reading books in English on the topic, there are actually two very good books on the history of the printing of the Talmud. The first is a work by a person by the name of Marvin Heller, and the book is appropriately titled Printing of the Talmud, A History of the Earliest Printed Editions of the Talmud, and as the title suggests, this covers mostly the early editions of the Talmud, but those are actually some of the more important ones. And this is that particular book, and it's excellent on the early history of the printing of the Talmud. And then most recently, Yeshiva University in its museum actually had a wonderful exhibit on the printing of the Talmud, and they published a companion volume that goes with this, and it contains a whole bunch of articles. Very, very important articles about various aspects of the printing of the Talmud, and that also appropriately is called Printing the Talmud from Bamberg to Schottenstein, and that is available as well. And that's also a terrific resource for those interested in reading more about the printing of the Talmud, and specifically reading more in English about the printing of the Talmud. And additionally, Aidan Steinsaltz and his Essential Talmud also has a chapter two, where he discusses the printing of the Talmud as well. And that's obviously another English source that one can go ahead and look at. But now what we're actually going to look at is one of the best Hebrew sources, and in fact what the vast majority of these books that I just indicated base themselves upon. And that is, there's a work called Maimer al Hatfasa Talmud, or appropriately again, an article regarding the printing of the Talmud. And it was published by Rav Nosson David Rav Nosson Nata Rabinowitz, no relation to myself, but he authored this work, and it's essentially an introduction to his larger work, which we're going to discuss as well later on, called Dikduke Sofrim. And Dikduke Sofrim attempts to collect variant readings based upon manuscripts and other printed editions, as well as other statements of the Rishonim of the Talmud. And as an introduction to his larger work, Dikduke Sofrim, he compiled an article, although it's book length, with regard to the printing of the Talmud. And after he published it, it was then edited, and then published with extensive footnotes, additions to the footnotes, by a person named Haberman, and it was published by Masoret HaRav Kook. And in fact, Masoret HaRav Kook, maybe in the last year, maybe less, has actually republished this book, Maimer al Hatfasa Talmud by Rabinowitz, and it's available, as far as I'm aware of, in most, in any decent Svarim store. So that should, you know, be easy enough for anyone interested in obtaining the Hebrew version of this work. And what we're going to start with is, we actually can't start with printed editions. Instead, as Rabinowitz indicates in this footnote that we're about to see, actually it's not only printed editions that have issues of censorship. And just before we actually get into the censorship, I just want to be clear what we're discussing here. And in later classes, we're going to discuss another form of censorship. But for our purposes tonight, what we're going to be discussing are censorship that's external. And external censorship means that non-Jews, typically Christians, would ban outright or require books to undergo censorship by a person appointed to ensure that there were no statements that were contrary, again, mostly, to the Christian religion. Sometimes it's also political, but for the most part, we're going to limit ourselves tonight to Christians or non-Jews generally. So that means that references to Jesus or similar references to Christianity or more generally to Edom being the general reference to Rome, and although Rome really bears no relationship to Christianity, but that at least amongst many Jewish philosophers, that they've been associated as one and the same. So those sorts of references were removed or required to be removed, or in some cases, Jews preemptively removed those references in an effort to avoid any sort of conflict. And as I mentioned, some cases the conflict was very serious, and we'll see some of those. That is, there was an outright ban on mentioning those sorts of things. So if you did include that in your book was likely to be banned or prohibited from being printed. In some cases, it wasn't necessarily that your books would be banned. It was just a good business practice not to get in trouble and go ahead and not include these particular references. In other cases, what happened is that they would actually publish books, or books would have been published, and then a particular papal decree would come down and order that various references were required to be excised. So people were required to submit books that they owned. In other words, not books that were necessarily printed contemporaneously with the decree, but just books that they owned to the censor in order for them to keep it in their houses. And then what the censor would do, he would go through the book, he or she, typically a he, and they would have a list of offensive passages, and they would actually cross out those particular passages. Sorry about that. So what they would then do is they would actually, mark through the offensive passages, and that would allow for the book to remain in its condition. Now what happened is because the printed word typically, in other words, the actual printed text was it lasted longer than the ink that was used to cross it out. Many times one can see today, if one goes to any decent library and, gets books, let's say, from the 15th or 16th centuries, you can see that the censor marked it, but his pen has faded from the text that he marked, and you can actually read what's underneath it. I'm just trying to locate one. I have one here. Maybe not. Anyways, but be that as it may, so what you can actually see is the pen mark as it was through it, and that pen has faded. So those are the different formats that we have for censorship. And just before I begin, also, it's important to note that there's another book, also in English, that's actually a very good history of these particular types of censorship. That is the external censorship that we're going to deal with tonight. And that book is by William Poppers. It's actually fairly old. It was done at the turn of the 20th century. And again, it's appropriately called The Censorship of Hebrew Books. And he actually has an example of what I've just described to you on the first plate, and hopefully you can see that. And as you can see on the plate that I'm holding up, you'll see that the line, the book, you can see all the lines that are struck through. But in many cases, although it's difficult probably for the viewers to see it, but trust me when I tell you that a lot of times these lines have faded, and then you can go ahead and read the particular text of the book. And again, it's something that looks like that, and that would be what you would get back from the censor. Now, it's, as I mentioned, it's not only printed books, but if we turn our attention to this first page from the Rabinowitz is talking about the earliest editions of the Talmud here. And what he's explaining is that the first complete edition of the Talmud, as some of you may or may not know, was by Daniel Bomberg. But prior to Bomberg's full edition of the Talmud, there was another edition done by Sansino that was incomplete, and it was just various volumes of the Talmud that were published. And this was long before any sort of papal decrees or any similar decrees that banned the particular usage of words or passages within the Talmud. So what Rabinowitz is discussing is that particular edition, that is the Sansino edition, the edition that's somewhat prior to censorship. And Rabinowitz is noting that, in fact, there are instances that references to Jesus and the like have been removed. And this is in footnote 25, and he first lists various times, various places that in the Sansino edition that these are missing. Now, anyone today can actually see these very, very rare Gemaras, or at least some of them. Again, I know almost every week I mention this, but it's actually a phenomenal, phenomenal resource. Again, the Hebrew University, the Jewish National University Library, JNUL, letter JNUL, they actually have this digitized book program, and they in fact have many of the volumes from Sansino, which a lot of them are, or some of them at least date to prior to 1500, and they're in Cunabula. They're all very, very rare. And today, anyone from the comfort of their home can actually look at many of these. But Rabinowitz over here notes that it's in footnote 25 here, Brachos Yudayinam Aleph, Echein Barashi Sham, Yudayzam Aleph, and he quotes all these various times that it's missing the passages with regard to Jesus. And then he says four lines down, the first word on the last word on the line, Vinirli, She'elu ha'ashmatos ha'mu'atos lo midei Sansino heim she'eshmitim b'fnei ha'shalom. That Sansino was not the one that went ahead and removed these in an effort to appease non-Jews. She'im kein lo haya meshir nechzol mechitzon ela shekbar haya chaseres b'ksav yad asher hitfis mimenu. He says it doesn't make sense because not all of the passages as they relate to, let's say, Jesus or Christianity or the similarly potentially offensive passages are removed from the Sansino edition. Instead, we are missing a few here and a few there. So therefore, Rabinowitz posits that it's possible that the manuscript that Sansino was using already has examples we see the effect of censorship on it. That is, the manuscripts that he was copying from, prior to the publication of any printed editions of the Talmud, they themselves were already corrupted. They themselves were already lacking. And he says, Ki besfarim asher nichtavu besfard, because manuscripts that were written in Spain, hayiragilim hasofrim lahashmitam al pitzivoy hamalchus mitchilas ha'elef hashlishi v'hala. In reality, already from the year 6000, we're in, so around 700 years ago, so around the 1300s, approximately, already in Spain, they already proactively removed mentions that were potentially offensive. But that particular decree had been forgotten, so therefore sometimes copyists copied exactly how they had, and they didn't mind copying passages that were potentially offensive or not. That many times they decided to include them, and sometimes they decided not to include them. But in other words, any time that we find in Sansino that there is a lack, that a statement is lacking, we can't necessarily attribute it to Sansino, but instead we have to go back hundreds of years to the manuscripts and the possibility that those manuscripts are actually corrupted. So in other words, it dates long back before actually the printed edition, at least according to Rabinowitz's theory over here. Now, what happened was, as some of you may or may not know, that, in fact, aside from censorship, in 1555, the Talmud was actually banned and burned in Italy. There was, of course, the earlier decree with regard to possessing or owning manuscripts of the Talmud, and we have actually kinos that we recite, that are lamentations that we recite on Tisha B'Av, that recall that particular destruction in the 13th century. However, in the 16th century, after the first publications of the complete Talmud, the entire Talmud itself was actually put under a ban, as well as other books, and was restricted and burned. And this had an amazing effect, because, as I mentioned, the only complete Talmud was actually printed or published in Italy. And, of course, Italy being the seat of the Pope, he actually was able to have the effect on the ban and the burning of the Talmud was actually extremely effective. And there was actually a couple different Xeros, and, you know, for those interested in reading more, particularly about this part in history, they can reference, as I mentioned, Heller's book, as well as there's a work in Hebrew called Sreifas HaTalmud d'Italia, that is the burning of the Talmud in Italy by Avram Yari, and it was printed either separately or it's included in his collected writings called Mechkere Sefer. Now, this ban or burning of the Talmud, although, as I mentioned, there were actually Daniel Bomberg actually completed a Talmud. He actually completed 2.5 or 3 editions of the complete Talmud. That is, he went through 3 full editions of the complete Talmud prior to the burning of it. And there was another printer that also had published an edition of the Talmud. But that said, already a year after, or during the year that the Talmud was banned and burnt, we have testimony, contemporaneous testimony, about how rare the books of the Talmud became. And this is from a book called Pardes Rimonim, which collects the various agados, the various stories, for lack of a better term, or the non-legal passages in the Talmud. And in his introduction, he explains that you shouldn't blame him if he incorrectly quotes, because again, this is more or less just a collection of statements in the Talmud, if he incorrectly quotes from the Talmud, because he explains in the bracket, the part hopefully that everyone is seeing on their screen, that begins, V'yan, shevisha kezeh, hazos, lo nimsa po be'elo haglilo svarim kedei lahagia imenu ha-sefer hazeh. I have no other copies with which to compare my comments on. Haya dever, shalach Hashem b'Yaakov, v'nafal me'Yisrael, ateres roshenu, that this is a decree from on high, that affects us, v'ala belavash eis l'shmei meromim, and it's an implicit reference to the Talmud, and it's been burnt, and its ashes are going up on high. Shanu shnei amudei haTorah asher beis hora, it should be nishan alehem, v'achut hamashulash imohem notak, and the 3-pronged the tri-chord has actually been broken. Halo mishma ozen daval nafshenu, how our ears are heard, and are, how much pain we are when we hear this news. The El Shakai and to God, the Amar Litzaras Amo Yisrael died, that God should stop these horrible things from happening to his nation. Tziruf lezeh. Additionally, ki ha'atak hazeh lo haya rak echad kamos v'chosn b'otzrasi. In fact, I only have a single copy of the Talmud. The Rov Chashivasa v'yakar pininu, kidei luskus es harabim achuza v'lo apeno lihios mototeno imi kikmiya al zeroi. He says, and in an effort, because I only had one copy everyone used to borrow from me, and I carried around like an amulet, v'samti kechose malibi v'lechti b'derech, and I kept it like a seal upon my heart as I went on the way, v'shapku v'kumi v'medaber bom, as I, you know, when I went to sleep and when I got up. And then I was able to copy this and create this book that I'm now presenting to you, and I was successful in doing so. But he decries the fact that he doesn't really have any books to compare it against. None whatsoever. Within a year span, all of those copies have been destroyed. And he's not the only one to have such a terrible effect. This is actually a fairly well-known statement. There's a commentary on Avos called Lechem Yehuda, again printed in 1554. And he describes what happened to his book. Again, it wasn't even a Talmud. It was merely his commentary on Avos. And he says as follows, and it's this bracketed thing over here where it says the Hidfastiv, the Pamachas. And he explains, I've already printed this book once. Bivenetzia, in Venice, Baroshnas Kihemer Shakai. In the year Shin Dala Yud, which would be 1554, he says, Ligzeros Malchus Romi b'chol Malchus Edom v'sarfu tatamud v'agadus tatamud, that there was a decree in 1554 where they destroyed, they banned and burnt all the Talmud as well as the agadus tatamud, shel Rav Yaakov ben Chabib, that is the Ein Yaakov or the Ein Yisrael. U'v'chodesh Mar Cheshvan tishmo kein hu. And the month of Mar Cheshvan, which is a play on the word Mar Cheshvan, which traditionally has been interpreted as Mar, bitter, Cheshvan, although it really is, it's Aramaic, it's And really, the actual original word was maro cheshbon, and it has something to do with bitterness, but traditionally it's been interpreted as being bitter. Kein hu gzeiros b'Venetia. This is the gzeira that happened. This is the decree that happened in Venice with Sarfa Talmud, the Vagados, Vagamara Vafasi. He says that also the Rif was burned, not sure what that word is. I don't know if it's Mishnayos or not. B'yom Shabbos Kodesh. It was burnt on Shabbos. B'sochem Sarfu kol Sifrei kol Sfarai. Hashid Fasti, Shaya LF, the Tuf Kuf Svarim. I published 1,500 copies of my commentary to Avos, and every single one of them was burnt. Bahem Kol Masha Hayali, Velo Nishar Li Min Hatfus Ahu, and I had nothing left. Velo Min Hataka, and not even a copy, in other words, a manuscript copy. Afilu Ola Echo Lizikorum. Even a single page I didn't have left. And what I had to do, because I had nothing left to work with, I had to recreate it from memory. And he says, shlosha prakim. And after I had recreated the first three chapters, matsasi sifri echad min hatfus bedamim. Shalako Samiala Ish, that he says, I think it's Biad Gayim, Shalako Samiala Ish. I found a single copy that a non-Jew had saved from the fire. The Kinesiosa Bedom Yakarim, and I purchased from him for a lot of money. Brisi Mitocha Shizachisi Hashem Yisbarach. And the amazing thing he says is that I saw that God granted me this thing, Vasisi Hasheni Yoser. That is, he was able, when he compared the first three chapters that he recreated to the original chapters, he actually did a better job the second time around than he did the first time, even though he was working completely from memory. But again, what we have here is the entire production, or with the exception of a single copy, was totally destroyed due to censorship. Now, as I mentioned, what you have many times is even books that were printed beforehand or written beforehand, they were also subject to censorship. So what we have next is this page. Hopefully we can shrink this just a little bit. And you can see over here that this is a page from a manuscript. And this is an extremely famous manuscript. This is one of the most famous Haggadahs that exist out there. And this is from what's known as the Sarajevo Haggadah. And at the end of it, you can see at the end of this is a photocopy of the last page. And it has a signature at the bottom of the page. And I guess... written it in a little bit clearer, and that is revisto per, and then so this has been revised or revisited per, and then it lists the person's name, and it has 1609. And this, of course, is Domenico Visterani Giovanni, who in 1609 was involved in censoring. He was one of the censors that had to approve various books, and he had to revise the Sarajevo Haggadah. Now, he had to ensure that this particular manuscript, not a printed book again, that it was actually okay, and therefore we have, for posterity, at the end of this manuscript, we now have his legend that he had revised and that he had reviewed this particular thing. If anyone has read the recent book, I forget the author's name now, it's called People of the Book. It's about it's historical fiction with regard to the Sarajevo Haggadah. She has a whole... she creates an entire story behind this particular instance of censorship. But again, we actually have a manuscript that was subject to censorship in 1609. And what you have at the bottom is actually a passage from William Popper's book that I mentioned, Censorship in Jewish Literature. And he actually has a list, although this list has been expanded upon, he has a list of known censors and which books they've gone ahead and censored. And as you can see, Domenico Visterani Giovanni actually censored a few books aside from the Sarajevo Haggadah. But now what we need to turn to is deal with examples of actual cases of censorship. And so now we've seen that the censor was active and there were decrees and so on, but who really cares today? So hopefully this will illustrate at least one instance where this actually makes a difference. And that is that daily people make a series of blessings, thanking God for various either physical things that they have or spiritual things that they have. And in particular, we're going to deal with the three brachos, and in particular one bracha, of Shelo Asani Goy. That is, thank God for not making me a non-Jew. That's at least the meaning, if it's not, if at least it's not an exact way of articulating that particular idea. And the problem that we're going to see here is it's difficult for us to determine what was the original text of that particular blessing. And just before we get into it, it's actually kind of interesting. If you think about the other blessings that we make as part of Birchat HaShachar or the morning blessings, the vast majority of them are actually said in the positive. That is, thank God for opening my eyes. Thank God for allowing me to stand up. Thank God for allowing me to recognize the distinction between the rooster crow. So all those are said in positive, that we recognize God and we thank God for various positive things, for standing, etc., putting on one's hat or pants, whatever it may be. But when it comes to this particular blessing, the blessing of thank God for not making me something, that's in the negative. So in and of itself, it doesn't seem to fit with the structure, with the other structures. Now, of course, one will immediately point out that there are two other blessings that are similarly done in the negative, Shalos Anigoy and Shalos Anisha for men, although for women it's actually again in the positive, Shalsani Kirtzonom, assuming that they go ahead and say that. Now, but we're going to focus not on those two, but on the blessing of Shalos Anigoy. Now, if you look here, what you have underneath the page that we just saw with the censor is a passage from the halachos of the Rosh that appear in the back of Masechtos Brachos. And in this particular passage, he quotes a Gemara from Menachos. And as we're going to see, it's going to be difficult to determine what the original text reads. And it's right by the arrow over here. It says, Tana, we learned. Hayah Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, just lost the page there. Rabbi Yehuda says, there we go, Chayiv Adam Levarich, I don't know who keeps moving this, Chayiv Adam Levarich, Shalosh Brachos B'chol Yom, as a person has to make three different blessings every single day, and the first being, as you can see in a parenthetical, Sha'asani Yisrael. So you see that there is a parenthetical over here, Sha'asani Yisrael. In other words, that there's some question as to how this should read. Now you see next to Sha'asani Yisrael, there's a Pei Gimel. And Pei Gimel references the commentary on the Rush. And that commentary is done by the Tosfos Yom Tov, Rabbi Yom Tov Heller. And interestingly enough, this particular commentary also has a whole history behind it about its particular title. And at least according to some, although this of late has been questioned, he had to alter the title of his commentary because some people found it offensive or it offended for political reasons. The ruler that he lived under in that particular time. And the original commentary was called Lechem Chamudos and Madane Melech. And that seemed, at least again, according to one particular reading of this, and if you look at the first editions, indeed, that is the title. In later editions, and if you look in the back of your Gemara, for example, if you look in the back of the Gemara Brachos, you'll see that the title is actually Divrei Chamudos and Madane Yamtiv. That is, a change from Lechem Chamudos and Ma'adane Melech, that is, the delights of the king, to Ma'adane Yom Tov, to the delights of the holiday. And the story that goes behind this is that Rabbi Yom Tov Heller was forced to change this because people viewed this as an attempt some attempt at sedition, and that he was, in theory, preparing to usurp the king. And as proof of this, supposedly, he titled his book Ma'adane Melech, and therefore, in an effort to appease that particular, or to do away with that particular issue, change it to Madana Yom Tov. Now, be that as it may, he has a footnote here in Pei Tes, where he explains the particular nusach, the particular textual reading that has the positive, thank God for making me a Jew. And he says as follows, and hopefully you can see this, again, it's Pei Tes at the bottom, on the right-hand column in the Divrei Chamudos, or originally known as Alechem Chamudos. And it says as follows, Sha'asani Yisrael, Iker HaNusach, the original text reads, Shalo Asani Gai, thank God for not making me a non-Jew. Kimo, Beis Brachos, Ha'achoros, Shehein B'Lashon Shlili. Similarly to the other two blessings, it is said in the negative. Ve'onirali, Shem Birech Sha'asani Yisrael, Shayachol Lavarech Achakach Shalo Asani Yavet. Then he says, the halachic reason why one can't make the blessing of Sha'asani Yisrael, he says, because Sha'asani Yisrael includes in it the slave aspect of it. But then he continues and he says, well, what about the fact that we actually find, for example, the Rush, as we just saw, and other texts as well, that they actually say Sha'asani Yisrael. Uma Shenimsa, and this is the second line from the bottom in the middle of the line, Uma Shenimsa Kasa Sha'asani Yisrael, and that which you find in some text that it says and then the positive Sha'asani Yisrael, he says, Ein ze ele mehamat fisit. This text, these texts that contain the positive, that's only because of the printers. He says, Shigiu Kein Hasfarim. And they did this on their own. Kach nir li bar. This is clear to me. Uvitfus yasham, and in an old copy, Garesh Shalosani Gai. So now he's pointing to the fact that anytime you find that in the positive Shalosani Yisrael, that's been changed by the publishers themselves. And in fact, if you look at an old edition, he doesn't say which edition this is, but in an old edition, it actually says Shalosani Gai. Vechenu bekitzer. Bekatza avudraham b'shem harama. And then he says, as follows, and this will become important in just a moment. Shehager eino mavara shalo asani gai, kevin shalo hisa horasa v'lei dosa v'kdusha. Shebrochas eilu eino el haskolas b'yasa shaladam. So he quotes someone else, and we're going to see this in a moment, because it actually makes a difference in how you understand a particular statement from the Rambam. But he says that Avudraham says that a ger is not able to make, that a convert is not able to make this particular blessing of Shalo Asani Gai, thank God for not making me a non-Jew, because it all depends upon one's birth. This particular blessing, he doesn't explain how he knows this particular rule, but the rule that that the Avudraham articulates is that this blessing is discussing one's birth, and therefore a convert was born a non-Jew, although he or she eventually converted to Judaism, therefore they can't do it. But again, what you see from this is that the Avudraham seems to imply it was a Rishon, that again, it was in the negative. And he says, and then he quotes one particular person, he says, Katsa Shanusok Shasan Yisrael Yachol Avarech, Ulefima Shikatsa Shanusko Zu Eino Nirasa Ve'enai, Dim Kein Lo Yivarech Shalosan Yevet, and then he says that someone disagrees with him, and they say that you cannot, that you can make that a convert can go ahead and make the blessing of Shasan Yisrael. But he wants to argue, the Debre Chamudos, Rabbi Yom Tov Lipman Heller, wants to argue that any time you find the passage that says Sha'asani Yisrael, that is only due to censorship. So now we're going to see why this is so important to know. Because there's a huge issue when it comes to reading this particular passage in the Shulchan Aruch. And hopefully I can shrink this just a little bit so you can see this all at once, because this is somewhat difficult to get through, but hopefully we'll be able to walk through this particular thing. And that is if you look at the Shulchan Aruch about this halacha, and that's in Simen Mem Hei, so in number 46, Sifkat and Dalet, number 4, you look up what you're supposed to make. It says as follows: Salach Levarech B'chol Yom Shalo Asani Gai. Every day, a person must make the blessing of thank God for not making me a non-Jew. Now we have the Haggah, which is from the Ramah, Ramosha Yisoetz. And he says, Ba'afilu ger yachol levarechein. And even a ger can make this blessing. Avalo yomar shlo asani goy. Shari ha'yigoy mitzchilo. But he can't say, thank God for not making me a non-Jew, because he was a non-Jew from the beginning. So now if you read that sentence as one sentence, it makes absolutely no sense. Because what you have is a statement from the Shulchan Aruch, from Yosef Cairo, saying that you have to make Shalom Asani Gai, and then to which the Ramah comments that a ger can make this blessing, just he shouldn't make the blessing of Shalom Asani Gai. Well, what did he mean when he said that a ger can make that blessing? He's commenting on the statement of the Shulchan Aruch that a ger can make Shalom Asani Gai, but then he finishes by saying, so long as he doesn't say Shalom Asani Gai, which of course makes no sense. In reality, what happened was, as the new edition of the Shulchan Aruch by Mechon Yerushalayim notes, that what we're dealing with over here are two versions of the Shulchan Aruch. One version of the Shulchan Aruch says, every single day one must make the blessing of Shalom Asani Gai. The other version of the Shulchan Aruch, and this is the version that the Ramah had in front of him, says, every single day a person should make Sha'asani Yisra. To which the Ramah comments, Afilu ger yachol levarech kein. Even a ger can make that particular blessing, so long as he doesn't say Shalom Asani Gai. So now it makes sense, actually. So the Ramah is commenting on a version of the Shulchan Aruch that said, Sha'asani Yisrael, to which he comments, A ger can make that blessing, just don't say the other well-known version of this blessing, that is, in the negative. And in fact, if you look at note Lama Gimel, which is right here, they actually explain this, and they explain that what happened was is that there are two different versions, and what they've combined in the standard edition of the Shulchan Aruch are two versions that don't link up together. That is, the version that the Ramah had in front of him was different than the version that we have in the printed edition of the Shulchan Aruch. So that's how we have to understand that. And this is why it's so important to understand that there can be textual emendations or textual changes that were done and still appear, because if not, it's impossible to reconcile the comment of the Ramah with the comment of the Shulchan Aruch. And the way to reconcile it is the very simple fact that there were changes that were affected, and it just depends which version one was looking at to understand fully what the Ramah was referencing. So that's an example where we actually see this particular problem brought to head. Now, it's not only when it comes to the Ramah, we now have to look at another passage on the same rule. And that is the passage from the Bi'ur Agra, from the statement of Rabbi Eliyahu of Vilna. Now, many people may have heard the idea that the Gra, Eliyahu of Vilna, was very, very careful when it came to ensuring the fidelity of the text, and that the text reflected what the original text, or at least what he felt that the text should read. And in fact, many of his comments are Hagos Hagra, are to correct various texts. And over here, he's going to, of course, comment on these two different versions and try to articulate which is the correct one. And he says as follows. Shelo asani, that is in the negative. Kein hu berif, that is the way it appears in the rif. That is in the rif, it's in the negative. Beharambam, and also in the Rambam, similarly to the negative. Bechein hu betosefta sof brachos. And also in the tosefta, it appears in the negative. Uvi Yerushalmi sham, and also in the Yerushalmi. Avol. Girsas Svarim Shalonu. However, in the Talmud Bavli, Sha'asani Yisrael. The version is in the positive, thank God for making me a Jew. V'chein hu b'Rash u'b'Tor. And that's the way it appears in the Rush and in the Tor. Now, one may be asking themselves, well, what does the Gra mean? We saw that Rav Yom Tov Litman Heller said, although it may appear like that in certain texts, that is, maybe in the Talmud, or in the Rush, or in similar texts, Rav Yom Tov Litman Heller posited that all those are instances of censorship. So they're meaningless. So the fact that one can find a text that has it in the positive, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't prove anything. However, the Gra seemed to understand that there are two different versions. One version of the text has it in the negative, and one version of the text has it in the positive. And the version of the text that has it in the positive is actually the one that we follow. That is, it's Girsas Svarim Shalonu. It's the Talmud Bavli. So the Gra seems to be advocating, based upon his particular text, for the positive reading. Now, if, of course, this is all just merely a form of censorship, it shouldn't matter one iota that you have texts that read that way. But the Gra seemed to take a very, very different position. And for this, he's actually criticized by someone else. And this will be important as well, because for determining other things having to do with the printing of the Talmud. And what you have on the bottom that begins number 51, or Nun Aleph, is a passage taken from another sefer called Alvon Rishal Torah, which is written by the editor of the Vilna Press, Safon HaSofer, who we spoke about last week, who is Shmuel Feigenson. And over here, he's going to have a problem with the Gra. And he says as follows, and hopefully everyone can read this either in their own downloaded version or the version that appears on the screen, and it says as follows, HaBracha Shlo Asani Goy, the blessing of Shlo Asani Goy, and then he quotes the Gra, and it ends with Ad Kan Lashono, right over, if I can get that, right over here. And then he quotes the Lechem Chamudos, and then he says as follows, Ubelo Safik, and without a doubt, this is, of course, Safon HaSofer talking about the Gra now. Below Safek, Chodu Yidei HaSansoria, the Rosh Vatur, the Nichshobo. And he says that the Gra, he says, without a doubt, any time we have Shasani Yisrael, that's merely a product of the censor. The Nichshobo, and the Gra erred in this, the Lo Ra HaRosh Vatur HaRishonim. and the Gruff failed to see the other versions of the Rush and the Torah and the other Rishon. Because he says, now he's going to explicitly point to one particular edition of the Rush, and he says as follows, Ki berush shas benavisti, defus Amsterdam, topsalad. If you look at the Rush in the Benavisti, it's the name of a printer, in the Amsterdam edition of 1644, v'chein betor defus fano reishayin vav, and if you look in the Tor, the fano edition 1526, shnehem hanusach shelo asani goy. In both of them, those texts that the Gruff pointed to that supposedly read in the positive, they all have it in the negative. Uba'otza ha'svarim shahagon re'matasyohu strausun, and in the library of Matasyohu strausun, who was the son of the Rishash, nimsa tor arachayim, there is a copy of the tor arachayim, ksav yad yashan noshan al-klaf, a manuscript written on vellum, a very, very old manuscript printed on vellum, Ubo hanusach hanuska shelo asanigoy, and that similarly has it in the negative. V'chein b'shibole haleket hashalem shinayin gimel, and similarly in the edition of the shibole haleket u'maxer vitri shelo asaninachri, and then he says, now he's going to quote, and we're going to see this u'betukduke sofrim, and in the work Dukduke Sofrim that I mentioned at the outset of the class that collects variant readings both from manuscripts as well as printed editions, says as follows: b'nusach haksav yad, in the manuscript of the Talmud, that is the Munich manuscript of the Talmud, how does it read? Shelo asani goy. Because of shekach hi b'chol hakisve yad, b'chol u'b'chol hatfusim hayishen. Shanim, excuse me. So, and the Duke Sofrim, Rimnasa Nata Rabinowitz says, that in the manuscript that we have of the Talmud, as well as the numerous other manuscripts, and in all the early printed editions, the version is shelo asani goy. Therefore, Safana Sofer is taking task the Gra for arguing that in the Talmud Bavli, it actually has the negative version of this. Now, this leads us to a related question, and a very, very important question, in fact. And this has to do with, generally, the idea of emendations to the text. Anyone that's familiar with Talmud is aware that there are various commentators that appear either on the side, in the example of the Hagos HaBach, or the Hagos HaGra, for example, or in the back of the Gemara, that like the Marshal and others, that change parts of the text. Now, the problem is, many times, that one needs to know, again, like we saw in the case of the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch, what text they had in front of them. That is, when someone writes something on the side, erase the following words, and if you look at your text, and it doesn't have the following words, so obviously they're working off a different text than what you have, because they're telling you to erase words that don't exist in your version. So it's important to know what version they're using, because their comments are directed at one particular version. Now, when it comes to the Hagos HaGra, the Gra being a pretty important person, it's especially important to know which edition of the Talmud he had. So there's a discussion about which edition the Gra had. Now, Safana Sofer seems to assert that the Gra was unaware of the 1644 edition, the Amsterdam edition of the Talmud, because he says, if he had known about this 1644 edition and seen it, he would have realized that as in the 1644 edition it has it correctly, that is, according to Safana Sofer, it has it in the negative, the Gra would never have argued that the Talmud Bavli, that Svarim Shalanu has Shelo Asani Goy. Now, what we have over here is a passage from an excellent, excellent book, a recent book by Yaakov Shmuel Spiegel, called Toldos Sefer Ivri, A History of the Hebrew Book. And so, thus far, he's put out two volumes, the first one being focused on Hagos and Magihim, those who amend or alter texts, and in it he discusses Hamadura HaTalmud Shehaisa Lifnei Hagra. You can see the heading; it's heading 5. And hopefully, we can make this just a little smaller so you can see it on the screens. And it says he's going to discuss which particular edition did the Gra have, and he says as follows: Hamadura HaTalmud Shehaisa Lifnei Hagra Yesh Biyadeinu Shtei Masoros. We have two different traditions regarding which version of the Talmud the Gra had in front of him. Mipira Rafal Nasa Nata Rabinowitz, who is the author of Dikduke Sofrim, He quotes as follows, V'shamata mipi Talmud Chacham Gadol Shirasa Talmud Shalomet Bo Hagon Zal. Eitzo Rabbi Huda Bachra Chav Bezin Bekiva Kedosha Sini Im Hagos Biksav Yadav. One person said, I had seen the copy of the Talmud that the Gra had. Behein Mu'atos V'shonos Mehagos Hanitposos. And they are actually different than the printed edition, the printed versions of the notes of the Gra. But Talmud, Haya Dufus Benavisti. It's the very edition of the Talmud that Safan HaSofer alleged the Gra had never seen, because if he had seen, he never would have made that comment. That is, Hainu HaKavana L'Madura Satama Shnitfas Amsterdam Ayidei Emmanuel Benavisti Bishnas Tav Dalet Tav through Tav Ches. That is, this is a reference to the Amsterdam edition of the Talmud that was printed between the years 1644 and 1648. Which, of course, as Spiegel is about to point out, is the opposite of what Safan HaSofer alleges. And that is, Safan HaSofer alleges, in a different place, Frankfurt, that is, there was a Talmud edition printed in Berlin and in Frankfurt that was printed between the years 1725 and 1732, Shalamat Bahen Hagra Bekasov Alehem Es Hagosa Be'etzem Ksav Yadav. These are the versions that the Gra wrote his notes on in his own hand. So what we have over here is that it's impossible, because if, aside from the fact that Safan HaSofer identifies the Berlin and the Frankfurt am Main editions, his comments about Shlomo Sanigai are clear that he did not believe that the Gra had the Benavisti, the Amsterdam edition. Because, again, he alleges that the Amsterdam edition is clean, that is, it's free from this particular form of censorship, and therefore there would be no way, if the Gra had seen this, to make the comment that the Gra went ahead and made with regard to Sha'asan Yisrael. So, Spiegel actually deals with this in this particular passage, and he tries to determine, let's get back here, finish the comment over here, and he says, in the end, he says, "Kedei liyashev mesoros elu," in order to deal with these two conflicting traditions, "lechora aleinu lomar," we have to say, we are forced to say, "sha Talmud shalamad bo hagra," that the edition of the Talmud, or the version of the Talmud that the Gra learned, "haya morkav mitzfusim shonim," are actually, he didn't own, or he didn't have access to a complete set of a single printer. Instead, he had a volume from this one and a volume from that one, and therefore, Spiegel says, Yesh lidvo kol mesechtos u mesechtos benifrat. Therefore, we have to look at each book of the Talmud separately to determine which edition the Gra was commenting on. Vein mahakesh mebitikas nosei mesuyam mesechtos achas. And therefore, we can't look at one thing and say, well, it's clear that the Gra had this particular edition for this particular book of the Talmud, because he says, "Kegon shinui machmas sensoria on mesechtos acheros," with regard to changes that the censor has wrought on various mesechtos, and you can't use that to determine which other mesechtos he used, which versions he used for other mesechtos. Shaba ula yeshinai benosei ze, rak bedika shall kol maduras atama legabe kol mesechtos nifra yichol mahavu detosos bedukas biyosei. So, even though it's true and it's correct that we can look, let's say, at the Berlin, as someone notes, that the Berlin Frankfurt edition is censored, so all because we see that the Gra referencing that for one particular statement in one particular Masechta, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Gra used that consistently through every single volume of the Talmud. Rather, as we've seen now, because there are these conflicting statements with regard to which edition the Gra had, we need to examine each and every volume of the Talmud and the notes of the Gra on that particular volume and try to work backwards and figure out which edition is he actually commenting on. And all because we figure that out for one particular volume of the Talmud, that doesn't necessarily end our inquiry. Instead, we have to go through each and every volume of the Talmud with the notes of the Gra to try to determine for each and every volume which edition he had. And as we've seen till now, it's actually important to understand that, because let's say it's true for a moment with regard to the question that we're dealing with here. The blessing of Shlomo Sanigai or / Sha'asani Yisrael. if we can somehow demonstrate that the Gra had both the Amsterdam as well as the Berlin editions of the Gemara Menachos or the Gemara Brachos that has the comments of the Rush, and he was cognizant of the fact that there are two versions, that is, depending upon which edition you pick up, if you pick up the Berlin edition or you pick up the Amsterdam edition, and if you look at both and you match them up, you'll see that in one it has a Shasani Yisrael, and one it has a Shalom Sanigat. And then if the Gra commented that our text, that is the text of the Bavli, reads Shasani Yisrael, that means he was aware of the fact that some versions read Shalom Sanigat. But he decided, for reasons unknown to us, at least right now, that to prefer the reading of Shasani Yisrael, even though he probably understood, as we do today, that that may be a product of censorship. But if we know for certain that the Gra had access to both versions, that is, the version that's censored, arguably, allegedly, and the non-censored version, and then he still decided to go with the particular version that was allegedly censored, it means that he felt that it wasn't a product of censorship, and instead that was actually a legitimate reading. If, however, Safan HaSofer is correct, and the Gra had only seen one edition of the Talmud, and the particular edition of the volume of the Talmud that he was looking at was censored, therefore the Gra's comment, Ubisfarm Shalanu, is meaningless, because it's all an error. The Gra didn't have all the facts in front of him. He only had the one edition, and that edition was subject to censorship. So the fact that the Gra found that Bavli had it in a particular fashion, that doesn't tell us anything when it comes to the particular blessing of Sha'asani Yisrael or Shalosani Gut. Now, just before we move on, it's important to note that when it comes to the blessing of Shalosani Gut, there are problems in and of itself. Although one may say, like we saw in Rav Yom Tov Lipman Heller, that it works with the other two blessings that are collected around it, that is Shalosani Eved and Shalosani Isha, that those both are in the negative. In reality, saying Shalosani Gut does not really articulate what we are trying to articulate. We are trying to articulate, thank God for making me a Jew and not a non-Jew. That's essentially what we're trying to do. The word Goy, however, doesn't necessarily mean non-Jew. Everyone knows the word Goy actually just means nation. Now, it's possible in context for it to read to mean a non-Jewish nation when compared to the Jewish nation, but in and of itself, it doesn't necessarily mean that. In fact, There was a custom in Frankfurt that when they said, I think it's in Hazinu, that it says that God will send, Am Nachri or Goy Me'eretz Rechoka, that they would actually point to that the Frankfurt, if there was any guests in the shul, this is not exactly, I think most shuls today have like welcoming committees and the like, this is actually the opposite. I can't remember if it's Nachri or Guy, Me'eretz Rechoka, it's in Hazinu, they would actually point out if there were any guests in the community and point to those people as indicative of what the curse in the Pasuk is referring to, which is obviously a very peculiar your method of performing one's Torah reading. But be that as it may, the word Guy doesn't really mean what we're trying to articulate. Furthermore, there are those that say, well, if we don't go with Guy, maybe we should go with Nachri. That is foreigner. That's typically the way that that's translated. But that's a problem as well because Jews or the Jewish people are also referred to sometimes as Am Nachri or referred to Nachri is not only used exclusively to refer to non-Jews as well. There's a tshuva from Shlomo Kluger about this, about whether or not Nachri necessarily is any better than saying Shalom Sanigai. Therefore, it's possible to argue that the Gra felt that the reason that we say that it's actually a legitimate nusach, that is, it's a legitimate reading of the text to say it in the positive, thank God for making me a Jew, because that's the only way to clearly articulate what you're trying to thank God for, and that is for making me a Jew. But any way that we try to articulate the negative, there are problems with the words that we're going to apply, because no word in the Torah, no biblical word or no word in Hebrew refers exclusively to non-Jews. There's no word Gentile in the Torah, or that's exclusively used to refer to Gentile. So therefore, it's possible to argue that the Gra felt that it is correct, that there actually is a legitimate nusach, that is, there's a legitimate reading that has Sh'asani Yisrael. And in fact, it wouldn't only be the Gro that had that, but if you recall, the comment of the Ramah assumed that the Shulchan Aruch was referring to Sh'asani Yisrael. So the Ramah also seems to accept the idea of Sh'asani Yisrael. He just says that that's fine, and a ger shouldn't make the Shlo Asani Goy, but he doesn't seem to prefer either Sh'asani Yisrael or Shlo Asani Goy when it comes to a Jew from birth. He doesn't take a position on that, and he seems to view both as legitimate forms of the same blessing. So with that said, it's possible to understand the Gra that he would actually hold that it is, unlike the Tosos Yomtov, unlike the Yomtov Lipman Heller, that the only texts that read Sh'asani Yisrael are a product of censorship. The Gro actually may take the position that they're not a product of censorship. And in fact, there was a perfectly legitimate reason, and in fact, it seems that the Gro seems to adopt that particular reading. Because remember, he finishes, although the Bir HaGro is typically very, very succinct, sometimes difficult to figure out exactly how he ultimately holds. In this case, it seems to appear that he's actually holding that one should actually prefer the reading of Sh'asani Yisrael. And of course, if that's merely a product of censorship, there's no reason for the Gra to prefer that particular reading. So with that said, that's one example, as we've had, where we've seen censorship and its lasting effects and the difficulties that we have when it comes to determining what the original text reads and how to go about determining what the original text reads, and whether or not the text as we have them are products of censorship, or in fact they actually have been fixed, or in some cases are not necessarily products of censorship. And although we're out of time for this particular week, we will continue next week with the rest of the sheets that we have in this particular package that you have, that hopefully whoever wanted to download it, if not, obviously you can download it next week. I'll show you other examples where the Vilna edition of the Talmud actually retains the effects of censorship, at least in many instances. There is no doubt that it's, unlike the case of Sh'asani Yisrael, that there's no doubt whether or not it's a product of censorship. It's still retained in the standard editions of the Talmud. And if anyone has any questions on any of this, please either feel free to use the chat box, which is underneath the video, or if you want, as well as I've indicated in previous lectures, that you can always feel free to email me. My email is Dan Rabinowitz, it's all one word, and the last name is spelled R-A-B as in boy, I-N-O-W-I-T-Z, @gmail.com. So if you have any questions, if you are contemplating this particular class and nothing comes to mind right now and you have a question later, please feel free to email me. But if not, I can take questions now via either the chat, or I think people also have their microphones if they want to do it that way as well, and I'll stay on for a few minutes if anyone has any questions. So please feel free. So someone asked whether or not the editions today have all the censorship fixed, and the answer is absolutely not. And we'll see examples of this next week. But as we see with the case of the Shulchan Aruch, with the Ramah, that in fact they are in fact not fixed. Now there are tools that one can use to try to work their way backwards to ensure that they're working with a non-corrupted text. But as we see with Sh'asani Yisrael, it's sometimes difficult to go ahead and do that. One of the books, as I mentioned, is the Dikduke Sofrim. That's the easiest thing to go ahead and look at. And the Dikduke Sofrim, although not written on all of the volumes of Talmud, the volumes of Talmud that it is written on actually has the printed text on one column, and the column next to it has the manuscript versions, and then the footnotes discuss the particular readings. Additionally, as many people are aware, there's a small book called Chasronos HaShas that attempts to gather up some of the things that have been removed from the Gemara and then put them back in. You can follow along with that. In other words, you would have to have that next to your Gemara and then follow along to see if you're missing anything. But in many cases, even today, even the Vilna Shas, the standard edition of the Shas, the Art Scroll Shas, or any version of the Shas, with the exception of Steinsaltz, which actually makes an attempt to fix it, and a few other lesser-known versions, they all have remnants of censorship in them. So it's very important if you're learning a Gemara that you think has been altered, and the easiest way that would sort of clue you in is if there's, again, something that may be perceived as negative towards non-Jews or specifically towards Christianity and the like, although sometimes it's more subtle, as we'll see next week, to look at one of those things to ensure that the text as you have it is correct. Now, another way that you can do this is you can actually look at various manuscripts online. Again, aside from the digitized book collection on the Hebrew University Library, they actually have a manuscript collection of the Talmud. And what you can actually do is you go there and you say, I am learning the following Masechta. And you pick the Masechta, and then you pick the page, and then it tells you which manuscripts are available online. You can just look at and then match it up and see if there's something changed from there. Now, so that's a way to try to do that. Now, with regard to the Chasronos HaShas adds some, but again, it's very limited to mainly things having to do with Christianity. But many of the more subtle pieces are missed by the Chasronos HaShas. Now, and some of those, indeed, were put back into the Gemara, so that's why you'll see some of those back. But, and those are indeed genuine, and again, the easiest way to determine whether or not something is genuine is to look at the Zigzuke Sofrim or at manuscripts and see whether or not those manuscripts have those particular passages. And if those particular passages appear in manuscripts, and they are things that deal with Christianity or the like, then it's likely that they were removed for that reason, and therefore one can go ahead and look back to the manuscript and say, oh, it's very obvious, this is a negative reference to Jesus, so it's obvious that it was removed. But then when you go back to the manuscripts, it actually appears there, so one can assume very rightly that's where it actually goes to. Now, with regard to the Shasani Yisrael, indeed, according to the Gra, that is, at least the reading of the Bira Gra, that is the right way to say the Bracha. So although someone notes that the conservative sitter has Shasani Yisrael, it's possible, and indeed, it's not only possible, it's a very, very fair reading of the Gra, that there is a basis for saying Sha'asani Yisrael. And it's not an innovation of the conservative movement. In fact, as we've seen, the Gra, as well as others, actually seems to advocate for that particular reason. And in part, it may have to do with some of the issues that I identified. That is, the word, we don't necessarily have a word that refers solely to Gentiles, to non-Jews. So therefore, any articulation in the negative that we try to distinguish ourselves from non-Jews, we don't have a clear manner of doing so. And remember, when it comes to brachos, the Gemara, the Talmud, is explicit that we should always be clear whenever expressing a blessing. It should always be in the clearest form. So if there's a clear form that actually expresses what we're trying to do, that is, in this case, say that we are Jewish, why not just go ahead and say it in the positive? Now, we saw that itself raises some issues. If you saw in the Lechem Chamudos and Rabbi Yom Tov Lemon Heller, that it may be that you can't say the next blessing of Shasani Yevet, because that may be included in Shasani Yisrael. Be that as it may, neither one is really perfect, and the fact that some people would advocate for one or the other isn't necessarily merely a product of political correctness today, but in fact goes way back, at least to the time of the Gran, possibly earlier, if it's true that he had versions of his text that actually had that. So again, for all these questions, it's important to know where to look to try to determine whether or not you're using a corrupted text or you're not using a corrupted text. When it comes to the Gemara, as I mentioned, you have the Duke Sofer. When it comes to Shulchan Aruch, sometimes it's harder. You actually have to have in front of you the first edition of the Shulchan Aruch, as well as the edition of the Shulchan Aruch that the Rambam made his comments on. Now, both those today, thankfully, are available online at HebrewBooks.org. As well as at the Hebrew University website. that I've mentioned, and using those sometimes it's easy to reconstruct what's happened because you have to know, again, what version the Ramah had. But don't forget, we're talking about hundreds of different texts that quote Gemaras. That is, it's not only the Shulchan Aruch or the Rush or the Rif that quotes the Gemara. Hundreds of our texts quote Gemaras. So when you're reading a Jewish text, let's say the Menorah Samar or the Mesilas Yesharim or any book that you can think of, or a Siddur for that matter, and it says something, and you're perturbed by that, and you're not sure whether or not it's a product of censorship or not, then it's significantly more difficult. You'd have to trace it back to the Gemara. Hopefully it appears in the Gemara, and then you could use some of the tools that I mentioned, but sometimes if it's merely from the Rishonim, it becomes a little bit more hazy to try to determine whether or not those are a product of censorship or not. Sometimes, again, you can try to go back to manuscripts or critical editions of those particular Rishonim sometimes, but again, it becomes more and more difficult because, again, we're talking about a huge corpus of literature that was subject to censorship. The church did not only censor the Gemara. The church did not only censor the Talmuds. Instead, the church actually censored numerous books. There's actually a list. If you Google on Google Books, like the a list of censored books, I think you'll actually get, or Hebrew books, you'll actually get the Vatican for numerous years actually published a list of books that were required to undergo censorship. And I forget how recent it was. It's actually late 19th century, I want to say, or even into the 20th century, that they still retained this list of books that were subject to censorship, that at any time, depending upon where one lived, that they could be confiscated, and then passages that were deemed controversial were actually removed. So this is for many, many books, and of course it only exacerbates all these issues that we've been discussing tonight. And it's possible, I don't remember the exact date that the index was dropped. I neglected to look that up prior to tonight, but I remember it's actually fairly late. I don't remember if it's 1849 or later than that. But there's a list of books, and it's, again, not only the Talmud, it's many, many books that the church deemed problematic, excuse me. Now, we don't know for sure whether or not the Gra had which particular version, as we saw from the case of Spiegel. It's very hard for us to reconstruct exactly which edition of the Talmud the Gra had. No one has really done that yet, and that's still waiting for someone to do. So anyone that wants to go ahead and start on that, please feel free. And it is very important to know that, especially, you know, to know whether or not he had both versions. Again, most people assume, actually, that the way that the traditional stories about the Gra go is that he actually traveled around Europe when he was in Gaulis. He spent a period of time in exile. He had left Vilna and traveled around as an unknown. Part of the reason for that, at least allegedly according to some, was so that he could obtain these rare manuscripts to determine the correct reading of the Gemara. So that, of course, would fly in the face of the comments of Safon HaSofer. Now, with regard to other books, and especially the Chumash, there isn't necessarily censorship when it comes to the Chumash. When it comes to the Chumash, there's another instance that we have a serious example of Christian influence, and that has to do with the division of the chapters in the Chumash. There are actually two different formats of division of chapters, and this actually makes a difference. The simplest one being that the first chapter in Bereishis, without getting into all this, and there's actually at least two books written on the chapter divisions in the Chumash and its effect. It ends, the first chapter, if you look at when does Genesis 1 end, Genesis 1 ends after the 6 days of creation. And Genesis 2 begins with Shabbos. When you look at the Prakim, the actual Prakim, the Jewish chapters, where they have a Pei or a Samach, either a Parsha Psucha or Parsha Stuma, it actually includes the Parsha of Shabbos, because of course we believe that Shabbos is an integral part of creation. Although God didn't necessarily create anything on the seventh day, the fact that he rested on the seventh day is an integral portion of creation. So it's not necessarily censorship when it comes to the Torah, but how we read the Torah has been influenced by the chapters, and the chapters are completely a non-Jewish invention. So although there isn't necessarily censorship when it comes to the Chumash, there's another instance that we have of some external influences that may or may not influence people when they go ahead and read the Chumash. And as I mentioned, there's actually a book written on it, and it's called, it'll come to me in a moment, and it was actually just reprinted, that deals with the Prakim, and specifically the idea that they're non-Jewish Prakim. That's why if you look at the Quran edition of the Chumash, you'll notice that there are actually two different chapter there are two different chapters that are offered. There's one on the internal side of the page, and there's one on the external side of the page. And one is a reference to the non-Jewish chapters, the more accepted versions, or the more, I guess, the ones that are used by most people. And then the Jewish version is the other one. So that's why sometimes you'll, if you're looking at it, sometimes you'll get confused, because someone will say to you, well, look up in Shmos Mem, look up in Shmos 40, and then you look there, and it's not what they're referring to, because you're looking at the Jewish chapter, and they're referring to the non-Jewish version of the divisions of the chapters. But there's no instances, as far as I'm aware, of actual censorship, that is, words that have been changed in the Torah due to censorship. There is not a critical, the question was asked that some people are aware of, that there's various Rishonim on the Gemara, such as the Ritva and the Meiri, and the Rashba, etc., and those are printed in critical editions. The question is whether or not the Rush was ever printed in a critical edition. The Rush, to my knowledge, at least in its entirety, has never been printed in a critical edition. That said, the Tor, which mainly records, or at least for the most part records the statements of his father, has been printed. It's not quite a critical edition. It's at least an edition that has some notes and some attempt to ensure that the text is correct, and that's the Machon Yerushalayim edition of the Torah. And they note, much as they do with the case of the Shulchan Aruch, as we saw earlier, that and they try to ascertain the correct reading of those texts. But with regard to the Rush, there isn't a critical edition of the Rush. Now, there is a critical edition also done of the Rush's Tshuvos, at least part of his Tshuvos. Again, by Machon Yerushalayim, they put out the Tshuvos HaRush that also has, it's a fairly critical edition as well. There is an idea in the Chumash, someone raised the idea that there are certain words that are changed in the Chumash. There's a Kriya Niksiv in certain instances. That isn't a product of the censorship, at least it's for sure not a product of external censorship. There's a question as to why these were changed. Divrei Sofrim, there's a whole discussion about various words in the Torah and Tanakh that have either a Kriya Niksiv or have other extraordinary points on them. That obviously is a totally, it's a very, very different topic, and there's a whole question as to the rationale behind that. Anyone interested in reading in English about that, at least the best book about, at least in my mind, the best book about the text of the Bible is Textual Criticism of the Hebrew Bible by Emanuel Tov. It's available in English. And he discusses all those different ideas that have to do with the Torah, such as Kriya Niksiv or the 10 extraordinary points, and he collects a lot of the literature on that as well. But again, none of that is really due to external censorship of the type that we've been talking about tonight. And the book about the chapters, the divisions of the chapters of the Torah. The name of the book is Mesoras HaTorah VaHanaviim. Mesoras HaTorah VaHanaviim. It was recently reprinted and is also available online at HebrewBooks.org, and it's by Pesach HaKohen Fifner. And again, it was originally printed, I think, in 1909, and then it was reprinted in the last year or so, and that he discusses generally the idea of the chapters. Now, with regard to whether or not we know of cases where people refuse to change texts, not that I'm aware of. I'm not aware of instances, at least off the top of my head, that people actively refuse to submit to the censor. That said, there may be instances that it's happened, but as far as I know, I'm not aware of any that are. It's interesting because there is a famous statement from the Maharshal in the Yamshel Shlomo, where he deals with whether or not one is allowed to be Mishana Divrei Torah, whether or not one is allowed to change or alter the text in an effort to appease others. And he actually says that it's in the category of Yerek Ba'yavar, that a person should give up his life rather than go ahead and do that. I don't know of any instances when it comes to the text, at least I don't recall any off the top of my head, where people have actually gone ahead and done that. And what about Nelson Kamenetsky? I assume that you're discussing the case of censorship where Making of a Gaul was banned and so on. Maybe we'll get to a different week, but that really is internal censorship. That is, Jews take issue with a particular book as opposed to any external influences, that is, from non-Jews arguing that something should be changed. And again, our focus tonight was mainly on external censorship as opposed to internal censorship. Okay, and unless anyone has any more questions, again, you can always email me at danrabinowitz@gmail.com. That looks like everyone's questions, hopefully, have been taken care of for the moment, so I'm going to go ahead and sign off, and hopefully I will see you next week, and we'll finish up this particular lecture of censorship and its lasting effects, and we'll move on to other instances of perhaps internal censorship the following week, so 2 weeks from now, I guess the second to last class. But next week, we're going to finish this particular source sheet. So hopefully I'll see everyone next week. And again, if you have any questions, please feel free to email me. But for now, I'm going to sign off in a moment, unless you have any other questions.